Yeah. Well, next week maybe we'll get it. it's been, it'll be good talking with you guys. I've been looking forward to it for a while. So updating you, I've been back since October, so it's about due. But first I guess I would head it off by just reading the Psalm 67, which was kind of our, you know, a bit of our inspiration for what we're doing and what I'm going to show you up here. It's a short psalm, but it just goes, "May God be gracious to us and bless us and make his face shine upon us, that your ways may be known on earth, your salvation among all nations. May the peoples praise you, O God, may all the peoples praise you. May the nations be glad and sing for joy, for you rule the peoples justly and guide the nations of the earth. May the peoples praise you, O God, may all the peoples praise you. Then the land will yield its harvest, and God our God will bless us. God will bless us, and all the ends of the earth will fear him." And that's just kind of a neat passage that sums up particularly the ends of the earth and with obscure nations of people that we're working with. And so today I wanted to go through the most recent trip in 2011. I think most of you are somewhat familiar with what I've been doing because I've spoke here before. And so I've been there, you know, a total of 3 years now. But I'll try to focus on the most recent developments and how that relates to particularly the Evenki people and, you know, a project we have going, how to reach out to them and how we're going to fulfill it. So you can hit the next slide. So the first thing I want to touch on, just as a quick history, is my connection with Yura, who's our fellow brother in Christ over there. He's an Evenki guy, and when I first was in Russia, I lived with a Russian family, and the Russian family I lived with, the man of the household, had been in prison for many years together with this Yura guy, and in prison they found God together. So Igor, the Russian I lived with, would always tell me, "Oh, you got to go meet our brother. You're up north. You got to go live with the natives." And so eventually I finally met up with him. He came through town to sell furs in the city, and he invited me up north. And so I went up there, and through a lot of time of just spending with him and hanging out, I got to talk to him about his vision for how, or I guess God's vision that he's given to Yura for how to reach out to the Evenki people, which is quite unique and quite, feels quite inspired. But we'll discuss that later. And 2010 was my first trip up to the natives, and I spent a couple months with Yura in the village, and then he sent me out to his family, relatives who live in the forest nomadically, herd reindeer. There's one right there. And in 2010, I guess my main goal in going to the natives was to build relationships and just get to know them. And that went very well. Because I think I went through Yura, who was a family member of theirs, they accepted me right away. You know, as soon as I got there, we were already joking around, and they were taking me out on all their hunts and all their, you know, jobs they had to do, and it was a lot of fun. And we became very close very quick because you just, in the forest, you're always working together, or you're always sitting in a teepee around with each other. You know, you don't have your own room to go to or anything, so you develop relationships very quickly with people. And that was neat. When I first got there, people were like, "Oh, yeah, you know, we have our own God." You know, because we discussed it a little bit. And actually, the word shaman is an Evenki word. So shamanism, you know, as we know it, comes from the Evenki. But we got to, as we spoke over the time I was there in the first trip, even in that time, though it wasn't my specific goal, we talked enough about God that they began to ask me for prayer. Their first prayer requests were like, "Oh, Jordan, could we pray that the the bears and the wolves would stop killing our reindeer. So that was kind of an interesting first prayer request. But it was neat to see that they were, you know, recognizing that there's power there, and they definitely listened when we talked about God. He'd tell his kids, like, oh, gather around, kids. George is going to talk about God, and you'll listen, and you'll become Christians, and you won't drink, and you'll, you know, you won't smoke, and things like that. But so I came back, and then in 2000, I was able to go back and meet up with them again, which was great. It was fun. Right when I got there, the leader of the tribe, kind of Andre, who's always been open. He's one of the guys the first guy that brought me in, and the first guy we would always discuss, you know, have discussions with about God. He's the one that would tell his kids to listen. And he came. He himself, though, he asked for prayer, but he listens. But and he'll be like, well, I think we need to go to the Orthodox Church in the city and get our daughter baptized. You know, he still has a lot to understand about a relationship with God, but he is very open. And when I got back this time, he immediately, one of the first things he said to me was, hey, Jordan, my brother-in-law lives with us now, and he's been reading the Bible, and he's seeking God, but he doesn't know how to find him, so you gotta teach him the way or whatever. And it was just really neat that, you know, they had been waiting for me for that, you know, they recognized that need. And so that was Petya, the guy that he actually had been to a church before and repented, but then, you know, then he went back to his village and back into the forest and got back in drinking, get to drinking and everything. But he is very, very open to God. And I gave him a Bible and he read it almost every day. We'd go through Proverbs together and we went through Proverbs and Ecclesiastes both. We went through the New Testament too, but with my Russian, which is fairly good, but it gets hard describing passages like, I'm the Word and the Word is life. And, you know, so we kept it simple for a lot of our, you know, a lot of the time in just reading Proverbs, which is really simple truths. And then we'd discuss his questions he had from reading the New Testament, you know, the Gospels here and there, and the children was another neat part of the initial fruit we've seen, you're always hanging out with the kids, and they're really curious. Like, they found my notebook I had written in Russian, kind of just what I believe, you know, just about my faith, and the kids found it at some point and were reading it, and came up and asked me a whole bunch of questions about who God is and what, and that was neat. They really listen, and it's, you know, a new perspective to them, for them, from the usual, which is just a cycle of kind of drinking and this and that. And, you know, they're all in broken, most of them are in broken families, and so it was really cool to be able to, you know, plant seeds in those children too. So I guess I'll show you some pictures now so you get the idea. That's Andre. He's the kind of the tribe leader, and his daughter. Most of their kids get sent off to boarding schools, which is a shame, but he would always talk about how he wants his latest daughter, this daughter, to be homeschooled in the tribe so that he would be able to hold his family together and things like that. So that would be a neat thing to work towards also while we're over there. But you know, you can go on. They gave me this bear hide. It was a gift they gave me. Big old bear. Kind of cool. I didn't know what to do with it. Make a vest or something. But then you go on. You go fishing a lot. You know, you pretty much live off of what you hunt and fish and, you know, forage. So pine nuts and berries and meat of various sorts. This is on the fence. We built, you know, 30 miles of fence this summer, which was, you can kind of see it's all just stacked logs like that. No nails are needed, but it is the most work by far I've ever done, in just chopping down trees and trees and trees all. And living off of ramen noodles and pine nuts as he goes. But it was, again, fun working with the guys. Time to get to know them. There's his daughter. This is a picture. Yeah. Cute little girl. Little kids. The kids have a lot of fun out in the forest. That's just a little hut they built, you know, in the afternoon. But did a pretty good job. I was pretty impressed. They had benches and everything inside. I like it. They're both missing a tooth. They got knocked out at some point. It's a hard life. And then there's some of the guys. They're a little drunk. We're just coming from the village back into the forest. So. But that's Petya. That's the, he's our brother. And so he had shot a moose out here, and this was on our trip out to pick up the moose. And that's Sonia. He's an incredibly nice young guy and a good friend. And he's an excellent reindeer herder, great lassoer, and great, excellent shot. Anyway, yeah. This little kid on the reindeer, ride reindeer around. There's a big bird we got. It's, I guess, the largest sort of grouse that there is. But always delicious. Little girl. Just on a hike or a hunt or something in the woods. Some berries we collected. Delicious berries. I've never seen them before, but they're really good. Yeah. More birds. It's raining out there. We were checking nets, fishing nets we had put out. And the girl again. This is, they're nomadic, so you're constantly moving. You'll load up all your possessions on reindeer and follow the herd of reindeer that migrates constantly. And so here we all packed up. This is fixing fence or something, or building a bridge across the river, whatever we were doing. And then taking care of the reindeer is a big, every day you'll catch a couple and just check them over and make sure they don't have any infections and take care of them. That's what we were doing there. There's drying the moose meat, and there's a moose hide there. And it's kind of cool how they do it all. There's a couple of kids. They were both Diomka and Alosha, but those are two. Alosha, the one standing up, was the kid that got my notebook and read it, and it was just he just had a lot of questions. And Diomka, the kid below, he's really funny, but he does come from a pretty abusive family in the village, and so in the summer, his parents don't want to deal with him, so they send him out in the woods to live with the other, the other natives that are in the forest. Give him something to do, but he's really, a fun, sweet little kid. But there we are on reindeer. A bunch of the people there. He's making a rope. They weave, cut a reindeer hide, and so that it's a continuous strand, and then weave it together, and it makes a rope. That's Tolia, one of the brother of the leader of the tribe. And then a few of the guys, Andre, Petya, and Tolia again. He was reading the Bible with Petya and his wife. That's Yura. That's, the guy I work with the most, and his daughter. And this is a lady we lived with the first year I went over there. The sad thing is while I was gone, her daughter had a tree fall on her, and her daughter was killed, who's in the next slide, so the one in the middle there, which was really a shame. But she, so then after that happened, they moved back into the village. But and this is a lady that came over to do medical missions for Yura invited over this medical missions team, and they came over, and it was really neat. And this lady got she's from North Dakota, and she just had a really real burden for the people after spending some time over there and meeting them. And she offered to sponsor most of the project that I'll now discuss to you guys next. And our idea was Ura has 44,000 acres of land that he was able to privatize right after communism. It was his traditional hunting lands. And what he wants to do on that land is buy a bunch of reindeer, bring them in, set up basically a tribe, and then invite natives who have quit their way of life and just drink in the village to come out and learn about God and get support in quitting drinking and relearn their ways of life. I saw universally that the natives who lived in the forest were much happier people than the ones that lived in the village. The ones in the village just constantly drink universally, whereas the people in the forest, no, they did on holidays and any time they went to the village. But other than that, they were productive and happy and, you know, had their families and everything. But so the goals of the project, like you say, would be to teach Christ to the people, to promote a productive way of life, to give them support in overcoming alcoholism and any other number of problems that come about as not knowing Christ. But that's the most blaring, you know, you can't help but miss that. And so much of it is you'll go to these villages of a few hundred people out in the middle of nowhere, and kids just grow up in boarding schools or in broken families, and they start drinking at a really young age, and they don't really have, there's just really no other options. This is what everybody does, and so it would be neat just to provide an outlet for a lot of those people. And the people in the forest do pretty well, but and the village I was at was connected to many tribes that was in the forest. However, there's a lot of native villages that don't even have that. So they don't even have, if someone has a desire to be productive, they don't even have a place to go, really. There's no economy. And so everyone just lives off of their grandma's pensions. And they get little, I mean, it's minuscule compared to here, but a little welfare type thing from the government for being natives. And I think the restoration of culture is valuable because just as I have seen how much better they do in that way of life. And I do have a heart for, I always had a heart for like Native America and was always, you know, wished we could have done more to preserve, you know, their way of life. There are some really neat stories of missionaries who did work with, you know, the Cherokee or other tribes and did some really cool things, but you know, not enough or something. But anyway, so now and then provisions I just put there to point out and, you know, to make how much God has led toward. This was kind of an idea of Ura's, and when we'd come together and we sent it to the government as a proposal and, you know, it didn't get accepted. But then this lady came along that really made it a possibility to become reality. And I wrote and more also there as goals. It would be neat to be able to come up with homeschooling options for the kids so that they could stay with their families as opposed to being sent off to boarding schools. Because but from the time they're 5 to 18, they only come out to their families for 3 months in the summer. So they almost grow up like orphans, which is, of course, bad and probably a big root of some of their issues, really. So it would be an option to maybe invite families out to the tribe and try to hold them support them in being a unit, and we'll just see where that goes, and then you can hit the next slide. So I've kind of touched on this, but it's pretty shocking some of the what the people are facing over there. You don't see really anything like that in America, especially in the villages. It's just unbelievable. for example, one of the statistics is 1 out of every 3 natives dies from suicide or murder or an accident. So, you know, not from sickness or not from age. It's just 1 out of 3. If you imagine that in our congregation here, it's just pretty incredible amount. Ura himself had Lot, his best, or his brother, hung himself, and the wife of Andre, the tribal leader, she's of a family of 13 brothers and sisters, and you know, she's in her 30s, but now only her and her four other sisters remain. All her brothers are dead already. It's just kind of crazy in that way. But alcoholism is through the roof. If you're on a helicopter that's supplying the native village, they don't have roads, so they're all supplied by helicopter. It'll be ramen noodles and vodka are the things they import to these native villages. And it's as soon as a helicopter lands, everybody rushes to the store, and it's just a line there, and everybody's completely drunk until the store runs out of vodka. So you'll have a couple days until the next helicopter where the town's like quiet, and then it just goes nuts again after the helicopter comes in. And then broken families, we've touched that. Their culture is struggling. You know, all the elderly people speak Evenki, and the middle-aged people speak half Russian, half Evenki, and the young kids don't know any Evenki. They learn it in school. So you can just see the language dying, and with that does come, effects on the people's self-value and things like that. And like in the passage we read, and in many passages in the Bible, God wants to hear His name praised in every tongue He mentions. So, and just overall, it's the lack of knowledge of God, and the lack of having that light just has, even on an individual level and on a cultural level, on a societal level, its implications are pretty rough. But and then, I guess you can go on. Let's see. So, this is kind of just to give you a rough idea of what we would do as I go back to try to set up. And there you go. The first step would be to go to the city in Siberia and purchase a lot of the supplies we need, get them on transport boats or on trucks and ship them up to the village, and go to the territory and kind of see where we need to set up camps and huts and a sauna and things like that. And then build the structures, the most intensive would be the fence that we would have to build to bring the reindeer in. The horses have already kind of been taken care of, which was kind of a big deal and a big blessing. The collective farm in the area agreed to ship in a couple horses that we had bought for free, so that was neat. And then around September and December of every year, you're always going to involve yourself heavily in hunting and fishing and stocking up for the winter on all that kind of stuff. And hopefully, if everything went well, ideally, in December, we'd be ready to buy the reindeer, and in the spring of next year, we could drive the reindeer, for it's about 100 miles away, and from the tribe that I know, they're willing to sell us some reindeer, and drive them over to where we would begin our little project. And so that's that. That's kind of how it would go. This was the basic budget of what it was. Reindeer are expensive. The horses are fairly expensive, and so that makes up half the cost right there. And that's actually I did this when I was planning on funding it myself, mainly by selling my house or something. So I made it as skimpy as I could. Like that's the fewest reindeer we could have a continuous herd on, because with the bloodlines, that's providing for 13 reindeer. And building materials, that just includes things like tar paper and nails and there's a number of things. I have a whole budget written out. But then feed and medicine for the reindeer, just a small supply to have on hand. Food, a year's supply of food. It's not that expensive because you hunt for most things, so that would include noodles and flour and things like that. Tech, that's like a generator. Since we're not real professional reindeer herders that can track anything anywhere like some of the guys. We would get I've already bought them, but tracking collars that you can put on the radio, on the reindeer, and it has a radio frequency, and you can kind of, it'll beep when you point in the right direction. So help us to find the reindeer so they don't, because they actually move more than any other terrestrial animal. They especially in the summer, they just charge off into the forest, just run looking for mushrooms and then go miles and miles in a night. So that's a big part of your life, is finding your reindeer and herding them back together. And then fuel and oil for a chainsaw for a snowmobile that Yura has. And then that was kind of the total. Praise the Lord, the lady offered to pay for 15,000 of it right off the bat. So that was the huge chunk that we needed. And then over the years, from this church's help and from other individuals around, I've pretty much covered the 21,000. So that's pretty awesome. You can't, that's just, yeah, great. What can you say? But I'm still trying to raise a little more to make it easier on us, because that was such a tight budget that it would be, ideally, traditionally, the natives would have about 30 reindeer as opposed to 13 is what I did. And you're still looking to try to do that. And of course, life out there is hard, and you can use money to buy things that make it a lot easier, as far as like a gun or just simple things that I've tried to cut out of here to make it as cheap as possible. But anyway, that's kind of the gist of that. What we're trying to do, Lord willing, so far He's guided step by step into this position, and it's kind of a unique thing. I don't know how it's going to go. Europe is convinced that there's many, many people who have a desire to come to a place like this and who need support, and if that's the case, that would be great. And we could get people out there and people to take responsibility of the whole, of the thing, which would, if that went quickly and well, it would free me up more. It could be the type of thing that I invest years in and don't see a lot of initial fruit, and it might be a long, hard road. I'm not sure which one it'll be. I'm prepared for either, or whatever, and it'll be neat. This summer we have some medical missionaries we invited back up that came that one year, and we're going to go from Yura's village and float a few hundred miles down the river stop at these kind of isolated villages and do medical care. And they're mostly native villages, so it'll be a good opportunity to get to know people and get a feel for who might want to come, be involved in something like this. And so that was good time. That'll be good timing on that, because that'll be right in the middle of starting the project. So that's that. That probably gives you guys a pretty good idea of what's going on. I have a video that'll make it more clear, because it's kind of hard to picture. That one. That's just a 10-minute video, and it's kind of interesting to see how that works. The computer's a little slow, so it'll take it a second to catch up. Oh, it does. Weird. Uh-oh. Huh. I'll see if something works. They're just herding their reindeer across the river. It's kind of a neat picture of them. You can see some of them are all white, kind of interesting. There aren't any wild reindeer that are all white. It's just the domesticated ones over the, you know, over the hundreds of years that they've had domestic reindeer. They've just kind of picked out a white gene. So, it's, I mean, traditionally in shamanism, they're, you know, very, you don't butcher a white reindeer, and you kind of respect them more than. Little kids here. There's their motorboat.
Did you try? Here's how many fish we've caught so far in about 30 minutes. Bah. There's Borka. There's the whole river to ourselves.
To get to this spot from the native village, it's about 7 hours. On a motorboat upriver. You just won't see any other signs of life or anything. Way out in the middle of nowhere. Here we are moving, riding the reindeer across. They rely a lot on their hunting dogs to find food and things like that. So when you're moving, a dog will run off after a bird or something, and then you get off your reindeer and run after it and go see what it's found. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it gets pretty nice in the summer, actually. It'll get pretty warm. It might get up to 100 degrees. It's the bugs that are the worst about it, so yeah. So you can't really dress down. So you're always still dressed up. There's a little. Oh. That is a good shot. This is that Sonya guy. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, you'll see here in a minute. There it is. Killed it. That one shot from that far. Good shot. And he constantly did that. It wasn't a. It was good. Now, here are the reindeer. I mean, it's a little gruesome, but it doesn't seem to hurt the reindeer. It had infected antlers here, so they're going to cut it off below the infection so that it doesn't spread down to its head. It got infected because earlier in the year they'll cut off the antlers and ship them to Korea or China as a medicine. It's a Chinese medicine. So that's part of where the economy is in holding reindeer. They're just making sure there's no more pus there or whatever. Tie it off so it doesn't bleed. This is just a view of what the land is like over there. We climbed up on a little peak with all the kids. It was a holiday, so everyone in the at the tribe got really drunk this day, so I took all the kids up to the mountain, and we just hung out.
Alosha!
Or they took me up to the mountain, I don't know. Teepees are over there. But you'll climb up on mountains like this, and with the leader, you know, with Andre, and he'll just... You know, it's all their territory, as far as you can see. Sometimes there'll be a little blue mountain off in the distance. It's like, oh, that's where the next tribe's territory starts or something. But it's just lots of land.
Hey, so here's the cliff.
Professional. Oh. Now here I almost get killed here.
This is how they build the fence.
This is just building the fence. I took a little video of how we do it.
Starts with the first row where you chop down a thick tree for the first.
Yeah, we calculated that we each cut down something about 9,000 trees. Like, it's a lot of work. All day, every day, just mowing them down. Well, a chainsaw wouldn't work because you go so many miles, you can't haul the gasoline for it. So, because you'll be, you know, 10 miles
off. May and of the month of August, it's pretty much all the reindeer herder busies himself with.
You gotta be able to really accurately drop the trees. Which I was pretty good at, but the biggest tree I cut down over there, unfortunately, didn't go in the right direction all day. It's like
a
long time, and then it tips the wrong way. So you can see how they stack them on each other to make the first row of the fence. And then they stick those sticks in the ground. Get the kids out there. Stick the sticks in the ground like that, and set the second row on it, So that's the second row. And you do four or five rows.
I think so.
Sometimes if they're building a corral, you'll do six rows or so. But sometimes if they're just doing a real temporary fence, you can do three.
Here's the third row, and
this fence was doing a fourth. It was a big one, but we did two of them, and so that was the total. One was about 17 kilometers, and then the other one was bigger. It's just the big birds. I took a picture, but they use the fences to be able to manage where they graze. Otherwise, they'll overgraze the pasture because the lichen grows really slowly. And young man, catch the white one there. He actually got two of them.
Две сразу поймал.
You see the white one is broken to ride, so you see it's a little calmer. The other one isn't, so it's kind of. This was heading back to the village, going across the river. Taking the kids to school because it was in the fall.
Here comes a couple reindeer back to pick us up.
Actually, I fell in the river here, which is a shame. Because they put the saddle on, but they didn't tighten it down. Which they can ride like that. But I had never noticed that they did that before. And so I got on it, and I was going out, and it slid forward on the reindeer's neck. And I was like, oh, man. And then it just slid off this side. And got soaked. But, of course, there's a... What's that? Oh, yeah. It was fall already. It would freeze at night and stuff, but... So it was cold. We had to walk across that river with a friend, too. And that was incredibly cold because it was in your boxers, like, so you didn't get your pants wet and going through there and the water flowing really fast, but it's really cold. It's like from a spring. You know, it feels like it's fresh out of a spring, and it has really burned your legs. You're just like, oh, man, ow, ow, ow. But I have more video on the internet if it's interesting, and... you can actually type in with the Evenki into YouTube, and there's 9 videos each that are about 10 minutes. And so you can look more like that. I also put a piece of paper in the back there where you can sign up for my email list if you're not on it already. And now we'll see, Lord willing, I'll go back here at the end of March. And so that's the plan, and I'll be gone for, you know, however long necessary to get things set up over there. And, yeah, we'll see. I don't know where I put my passport, so that could be a problem. But I'll try to find it, and then so you can pray about that. But anyway, that's that, and thanks a lot for listening. If anyone has any questions, I could answer them too. Yeah. They translated Luke into the Evenki language, and that's it. But they do speak Russian. But, yeah, so. Mm-hmm. But there actually are a lot of dialects of the Evenki language because the people are, you know, fairly isolated and spread across all of Russia. But yeah, there's Luke. And,
Maybe it would be easier to win children to Christ as opposed to adults.
Well, yeah, you would have less of the entanglements of sin that have taken root. But, you know, there are a fair amount of adults that were surprisingly open to it, but you can see that it would be a long battle where you'd really have to walk alongside the people over years to help them overcome, you know, the worst of it, like alcoholism and stuff. And but the kids are definitely, they're definitely open to and ask a lot of questions and don't have as many doubts and stuff, but... Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know if everybody remembers, but your the budget that you showed, that's all to kind of build, would it be right to say that's to build kind of a base area?
Well, that would be a big part of the project, is right on the main river, we would build a base which would have probably 3 or 4 hunting cabins, as just little log cabins where there would be the winter base and also kind of the hub to the outside world where people would come in. You could offload your supplies and so a lot of that would be going to building that, getting glass and roofing materials and various things for that. Yeah.
Planning on having maybe a stationary.
So you would stay in that place. You still can't be stationary because the reindeer would eat the lichen down too far, and it like I was saying, the lichen this tall is 15 years old or so if they eat it too much, then you'll ruin your pasture for decades. So part of managing your herd is moving them, and they're naturally migratory. They'll take a yearly migration, so they'll always come back to basically the same area every year. And in the winter time you're more sedentary, so that would be the winter base. But then once the summer came, we would follow them and move them out and run all around the territory, I guess.
Did you learn the language just by living with them?
I don't know Evenki yet. I just know words. But I learned Russian by just living with Russians, yeah. And that would have been the only way I could have learned it, because it's out of a book. That would be very difficult, but it felt like a real long process, but But, you know, that was a pretty good way to learn just by living. I just moved in with a family and lived with them. And he was a real nice guy. It was Eager that introduced me to this Euro, and he would just teach me words all the time. And it was really fun for him to teach me prison slang and things like that. So then I would, he just had fun with it. And then I would go to the city, and I would have a different vocabulary than they expected. It's not particularly bad, but it's just, I guess maybe it would be lowbrow or rude. You know, it's like just prison slang, and they're like, what? Huh? But that's the only word I learned for it. And then I'd go and tell Eager, like, oh, how dare you teach me that, you know. And he would just laugh, like, ho, ho, ho. He's like, you said that at church? He's a joker. Anyway, yeah. Well, that was fun. He's a good friend. But any more questions?
Anybody from here that if they wanted to travel out there, you have any need for anybody?
Well, this summer, if all goes well and we make it over there, the plan is to this summer build the fence, which is a lot of work. It won't be as big as the one we built with the natives, but setting up of the project would definitely could be helpful. It's kind of something you couldn't do for a real short period of time because it's an in-depth process to invite someone, and then by the time they get over there and make it up to the village and get out in the woods, you know, you burn up a week or two on each end. So I believe with my visa, with my living permit, if I find it, I can invite people for 3 months at a time. So that'll be the plan. I mean, if anyone wanted to come over, they could tell me. And when I go over to the city, I could, you know, look into inviting them. I don't know the whole process yet, but I'm going to invite my sister over. She wants to come, and other people have mentioned it as a possibility. So, yeah, we'll see where that goes. But it is definitely an option, and it could be helpful. And it'll probably be helpful from now until well into the future. You know, coming over there and taking part in like the daily life of herding the reindeer is just something that, you know, you can be helped with because it's 24, you know, 7 days a week, you know, all the time, and it takes pressure off you. And it would, you know, if it got going, I'm sure it would be interesting. It's always interesting when you live in the woods. You don't have as much social connection, so it's interesting for people to come and be there and people see them and stuff. Yeah. Yep, yep. So it is an option. I guess $500 is the going rate for reindeer, and that's what I put in the project. Ideally, the natives, when they sell them to the collective farm, get probably less than half that, and so I might be able to come up with a deal with them to get them a little cheaper, but I'm not assuming that, so I didn't calculate that in, but it would be that would be an option. I wouldn't be surprised if we did it that way, especially if we were going to buy a whole bunch of them like that. But yeah, they're about $500 a piece. And we already bought the horses, which was cool. They were a little cheaper than I... Well, it was free to transport them, which I thought would be the biggest deal. And so we got 3 horses, apparently. And they're a particular, just as a side point, they're a fairly interesting breed. They're the only breed that can live north of the Arctic Circle self-sufficiently. They dig their own food in the winter. They dig up the snow and eat it. They just free range in the forest, and they, in negative 70 degree weather, they just stand out in the weather, and they don't need a barn or anything. They just live outside. So it's a pretty cool breed of horse, and they're fairly small, but they're pretty strong and can, yeah. So anyway, interesting. It's only in far eastern Siberia those horses exist, and so it's kind of an interesting thing that we were able to get them because the collective farm in our village went way over to the east to get new bloodlines for their reindeer to bring in, and during that trip they just said, oh, well, we'll bring your horses back with us. So that's kind of neat. Yeah.
How do they value you, Jordan? What do they think? When they think of you, do they think here comes a great American?
Well, they're not. The Russians, like, if you run into a Russian, they're usually pretty interested in maybe trying to come to America and things like that. It's kind of funny. The natives don't really care. I've invited them. They're fairly well-read. They know the states, and they know our, you know, they're more well-read than you would expect. But I've invited a few of them, and they're just like, oh, what would we do in America? So they're just not interested. That's a long ways away. Like, yeah, what would we do over there? Which I guess, yeah, what would you do? Watch TV or something? As for me, it worked out well because the typical stereotype over there of American is like, it's probably like a banker or it helped that I grew up on a farm and knew how to do certain things with my hands and work hard, and it would always kind of surprise them. And so then, and being introduced into the natives and the way I was introduced was like kind of a personal way, which I think helped. And they were friends. They look forward to seeing me. And every time I talk to Yuri, he's like, Andre and Valia were asking where you were. When are you coming over? I'd just say they're good friends, especially the people I lived with in the village, in the forest. In the village, it's a little different dynamic because there's so much alcoholism. Like in the forest, you'd think these are the most hospitable people you've run into, and in the village, you think, you know, you might get stabbed if you go to the store. So you don't. It's kind of weird. It's night and day with them. Staying in the village, I've found myself in some positions that are like, oh, I wonder if this is going to get crazy or not. But then I had enough of a connection to somebody at, you know, there that they would be like, well, you know, they'd vouch for me or something, and it was good. But it's an interesting thing, but it's good. Like, what do you mean? Oh.
Like anybody that you've met that might be a candidate.
I mean, we were in the village and you just run into, there was like it's a really nice young kid that was in the Russian village and he lived in apartments and Yura has known of him for years. You know, he's watched him kind of grow up and everything and but he doesn't really have family there and he just drinks all the time and he's probably 19 or something, but it would just be really cool to have a place to offer him to go to, just a place to go to do something, to, like, get on your feet and, like, hey, man, don't give up on life yet or whatever. And same with, he has a friend from a neighboring village, Paligus, same thing. He doesn't have any family. He's probably in his 40s or something, and he's been an alcoholic for a long time. But he just doesn't have any family. But you ran into him in that village and invited him to come live with Yura at his house. And so he was, when I left, he had the guy staying with him and trying to get off alcohol. But it's so hard in the village because it's just so available and everybody does it. You're constantly offered, and it's just always in front of your face, and of course you're going to get bored, especially in the village, and so you're going to have a lot of time to sit there and wonder what to do, and then go drink, and then once that happens, you just fall into your rut again. So that same guy, those are two examples that I think would be neat to offer him.
What motivates these people?
in the village, I mean in the forest, you know, they really love reindeer herding, and they really are like, you know, they pride themselves on being good reindeer herders and making it in the forest and managing their herd well. You know, it's kind of a lifelong investment. So you'll see the old men who have their you know, 100 reindeer, and they're the biggest reindeer in the herd because they've been, you know, carefully managed and bred, and that really motivates them. For the most part, don't have a real spiritual base. Shamanism was, you know, all the shamans were sent to prison camps, as were any Christians at the time, so, because communism was against religion in general, so they have vague and fairly specific leftovers from their old shamanistic ways, where, you know, like you don't do this certain things and do certain things, but it's that nobody knows about. Like, nobody could tell you about the great spirits anymore. They just kind of know that they're there. So that doesn't, just assume that they're there, but they don't know any specific anything about them, which is actually an inlet to speak about God with them too, you know, because they are aware of spiritual activity in a way. So, I don't know. The people in the village, it's, you know, they want, there's people that want to see the village do better and that want to see reindeer herding survive and their culture survive, so they'll teach their language at the school and things like that. But it's pretty much a lot of drunkenness, and that's probably what motivates people the most in the village. Get drunk, like, after the store, you know, after the store gets supplied with vodka, just you look out the window and just like zombies walking everywhere, like all through the streets, like meandering around. Like, when we get to the village, Andre like runs to his house and like shuts the door and locks it, and then people like, oh, hear somehow that Andre came, and all of a sudden you have like people like looking in your windows and like like banging on the front door. And of course Andre at some point managed to sneak to the store and come back with a couple bottles of vodka too, so he's drinking them, but then ducking like the other people that are smelling it out, you know. it's a crazy. And then the kids run away at the, you know, when you get to the village, you don't really see the kids at all. I don't even know where they go. They just run around. There's like an abandoned house or something. They go live in that. They go live at this person's house or that person's house, and they show back up every once in a while, and there's just not very good tabs kept on them or anything. But that's weird. And then, you know, and then of course the parents, when they go back for the winter, they leave the kids there and go back in the forest, and then the kids just, you know, do what they do. I don't know, just go nuts and skip school and all that kind of stuff. So it's weird. But it's a good question. I don't know. But is that it? Any more? My financial needs personally are fairly well met. I've kind of not asked for help before because of that, because I have, you know, being single and coming back every once in a while, I have time to make a little bit of money, and that's enough to buy my plane tickets, and I have a rental house that I get $300 a month off of, and that's enough to live on in Russia. And then, you know, occasionally a family or friend will throw some money my way, which helps. And then, so now that I have a specific vision for what, you know, for where to go forward, and that God's just really opened these doors, I kind of, now I feel really comfortable at, you know, asking the church, specifically my church, which would be this church, to, you know, take part in what's going on, and the needs, in, you know, are as shown, which is the budget's been mostly provided for, praise the Lord, but it is a hard way of life, and anything extra helps, you know, because that's on a pretty tight rope as that budget is written up.
So what would you do with additional money?
Reindeer. I think pretty much everything I would do is what I would put towards getting at least 20 reindeer. And then your snowmobile blew up, which would be helpful, you know, to fix that. And those are probably the two biggest things that I would work on. Yeah. I would be really excited if it if we've just found people, if it just found itself to be an effective thing quickly, you know, if there were a lot of people that were, you know, if it seemed like it was really meeting a need, which I can't see that it wouldn't, but that's the big, you know, that would be the most encouraging thing, is just seeing fruit, you know. So, and that's basically all I would really ask for. And in that, it would be, you know, there's a lot of missionaries that didn't have that, and praise the Lord, they like kept going forward, but that makes it a lot harder. So I pray that that there's, you know, quick fruit, and then if in the worst of situations I can't find my living permit, it'll be an expensive, like, reinstallation of that. Like, I'll have to go back over there and do a lot of documents and invest a lot of money in trying to get my residency permit again. So hopefully I can find it, but that'll be that. Yeah. Anyone else? No. If someone was to come over there, it depends on when the person came. If they were to come in the summertime, it would be a lot of building and helping on the fence. If they came in the wintertime, it's a little more. If they came before we had reindeer, it would be a little more of like maybe just an experience, because it would be hunting, which you're, you know, months and months. Of just a guy or two out in the forest hunting by himself or with a couple guys. So that would be a fascinating experience. But until we get reindeer, the most helpful thing would be in the summer to just help with the building projects. And then, definitely relationship building, and especially if someone was thinking about like investing more time, you know, like a fair amount of time over there, then that's of course very huge. And I mean, that's the main thing. So any relationship building, if someone was going to go over there with a desire to actually invest and try to learn some of the language and get to know some people, and then that's, you know, extremely important. And once we get reindeer, then they'll just be the specific jobs of herding the reindeer, collect, you know, finding them, and fishing and hunting and all those weird jobs that you, I guess, that go along with living in the forest. But all of that is centered around showing people Christ and building relationships with them, which would be anyone's number one job if they went over there. But yeah. Yeah, you know, it's interesting for any people over there to see someone else that believes in God, or, you know, that believes in the way that people tell them, especially non-Russians actually have a specific, because they view Christianity as Russian, like Orthodox. So when they see other people, it's like, oh, wait, it's God. You know, everyone's God. And it kind of gets them thinking in a little bit. Had that discussion before. Yeah. That we can't bring into the country? It's pretty, they're pretty open now that communism's fallen. So you know, you're pretty free to bring anything, which is nice. There's not a lot of regulations. As far as you can't bring, the things you can't bring are like guns and knives and things like that, but as far as Bibles and all that, you're free to bring them in. So I'll take some in when I go. Ron and Bobby had some good ideas maybe for that. Yeah, the natives have them and they'll let me use them, and so that works. Yep. And the ones that hold government reindeer can go to the collective farm and sign out for a gun at any time and use it. Yep. I can't, I'm not supposed to really possess one over there, so, it wouldn't be worth the, there's ways of going about it. If you, go over there specifically on a hunting trip that they'll let you take a gun for a period of time, but it's not a, you can't own one there as a foreigner. It's pretty hard for people that live in Russia to own one. You have to own a 22 for 5 years safely, and then a shotgun for another 2 years safely, and then it takes 12 years to get permission to own like a regular hunting rifle or something like that. So it's an investment. But cool. Well, thanks a lot for listening, everyone. And yeah, once again, you can sign up for the mailing list back there. And I really appreciate your prayer, and I appreciate this church's just support and being my home church. And yeah, I always like coming back and seeing all you guys. So, hallelujah.